One of my friends in central Wisconsin posted a picture on Facebook this week of a tick that she pulled off her cat. It looked like a wood tick to me, not the smaller deer tick that can carry Lyme disease, but it served as a reminder. The ticks are out there, and they're hungry. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, May 14th. And while I'm not supposed to share political opinions on this program, I can share my opinion on ticks. I hate them. They're gross. They carry disease. Why do they exist? I don't know if our guest will have an answer to that question, but he can answer your questions about Lyme disease. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our first guest during this hour. Steve Callister is a senior research scientist at Gunderson Health System. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you tell me why ticks exist?
I think they fall in the same class as roaches. They're something we'll never get rid of.
They're so gross. Anyway, my friend who posted the picture of this kind of big looking tick that she pulled off her cat, probably a wood tick?
Most likely a wood tick or an American dog tick.
Oh, yeah, that could be it, a dog tick. Yeah.
Sure.
So to tell us the difference, I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of ticks.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different kinds. Unfortunately, Wisconsin's kind of inundated with deer ticks, so the majority of ticks that we see in almost all of Wisconsin now are deer ticks at certain times of the year. What I tell people is ticks that anytime they see a solid black area or circular area near the mouth parts of the tick, most likely that's an adult female deer tick.
Oh, all right. So I always thought they were kind of tinier than the wood tick or the dog tick.
Yeah, they are smaller. The adult female is about the size of a sesame seed. The ones we are most concerned with are the nymphal forms of the tick, and those are about the size of a poppy seed, so most people never see them.
Yeah. Well, I understand that you see a lot of ticks because you go out and sweep for ticks.
Yeah, we just got done collecting. The ticks have been real active, even though we've had a lot of rain and a lot of cool weather. It hasn't stopped any ticks from moving. In fact, we were out last week in one area, just one farm in west central Wisconsin, and three of us collected 1,600 deer ticks in 3 days. So
there are
a lot of ticks out there right now. They're very active. They're very hungry.
So the harsh winter we had did nothing to dissuade them?
It doesn't appear to be. We had a lot of snow on the ground, and the ticks overwinter in the leaf litter. And I think anytime we get snow on the ground, no matter what happens with the temperatures, for the most part, they're very well insulated for the winter, so it doesn't really affect them.
So the populations are about what they usually are for this time of year?
You know, we haven't seen any difference. We collected them just as easy as we have. We've been collecting them for almost 30 years, so we didn't see a big difference. We saw lots and lots of ticks very easily.
So what do you do when you get all these ticks?
Well, we use them for different things. We monitor what they're infected with and how what the level of infection is in them. We also look for different kinds of ticks. There's some other ticks. I think, in general, ticks are terrible things for transmitting infectious disease. So we monitor whether we're just seeing deer ticks, whether we're seeing the Lone Star tick, which is another tick we're starting to be concerned with in Wisconsin. So we just have lots of different reasons for going out and trying to figure out what's going on outside.
Yeah, so are most ticks carrying some tick-borne illness?
That's pretty much true. I tell people that really all ticks are syringes.
Mm-hmm.
They go from one host to another taking blood meals, and they, in the process of that, typically will inject a host with whatever organisms they're carrying at the time.
Yeah. So what is Lyme disease exactly?
It's a multi-system infection. I know that sounds terrible, but really what it is it's an organism. It's a bacterial organism that is introduced by the bite of the tick that gives us problems because the organism itself, once it gets into the human host, can really go anywhere in the body it wants to go to establish an infection. And that gives us a variety of symptoms to be aware of.
And I know you're not a clinician necessarily, but we hear that this causes all sorts of we're tired, joint pain, that sort of thing.
Yeah, typically it's called a spirochetal bacteria, meaning it looks like a corkscrew for a wine bottle. And really, one of the hallmarks of that illness is the organism can kind of take up residence in a variety of sites, and one of the side effects of that is, of course, as your body tries to fight that infection, you can have a lot of fatigue and a lot of muscle aches, a lot of joint aches.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lyme disease is different than the tick-borne illness that's carried by the Lone Star tick?
Well, we don't know a lot about the illness that's carried by the Lone Star tick. We're starting to see that tick more and more in the southern parts of Wisconsin. For all intents and purposes, there is an organism being transmitted by that particular tick that causes an illness that I think is safe to call Lyme disease. It looks like it's a very, very closely related bacteria being transmitted. It's just that we don't know enough about it to really cubbyhole where that should fit. But for all intents and purposes, it's treated the same, it looks the same, it acts the same.
Yeah. Is there another a tick and another illness that's on the horizon?
Well, that's really the one everybody's most familiar with, but we're seeing more and more cases of an illness called anaplasmosis, which is kind of a mouthful, but it's also a microorganism, a bacterial infection transmitted primarily by deer ticks that infects the white blood cells. And the hallmark of that infection is a fever, and actually a very high fever. So people that get bitten by these ticks and develop a fever within 1 or 2 days after the tick bite really should be evaluated for that particular organism.
Yeah. So what should we do to protect ourselves from any tick-borne illness, from any of these ticks?
Well, the big thing is public awareness. There's lots of things out there that people tell you to do to keep the ticks off, and certainly some of the common sense things are make sure you check yourselves after you're out in the woods during active tick questing times, to make sure you're using some sorts of insect repellents that contain primarily DEET if you are in areas where you're seeing a lot of ticks. Other than that, I mean, the primary prevention is to get the ticks off of you before they've had a chance to bite for a significant period of time. With most of these bacterial infections, it takes a significant number of hours for the tick to be biting you in order for you to be at a high risk of getting an infection. So if you can do tick checks when you get in and really look and get the ticks off before they've been there and have fed for a long period of time, you have a really good chance of not getting sick.
Yeah, I remember as a younger person when I spent a lot of time mainly in the northern Wisconsin, that whenever we were out and about, it was almost mandatory. We got to have a shower when you came in to kind of make sure you'd wash off any possible ticks that might be on you. But now it's not just up north. These ticks are everywhere, aren't they?
They really are. They're dispersing statewide and nationwide. In fact, it's interesting. I started researching tick-borne diseases and primarily Lyme disease back in the mid-80s. And people in Canada were not dealing with this particular tick to any extent. And now we have these deer ticks have dispersed out of Wisconsin northward all the way up into Winnipeg. And we've got them on the east side of Canada, southern and areas we've never had them in. They appear to be just very adapting very well to different parts of the country, especially as our deer populations have stayed high.
Yes, and I know that Lyme disease was named after, I think it was the community of Lyme in Connecticut, and where it was maybe first discovered. But I've seen a map that shows New England as a hot spot, but Wisconsin also a big red hot spot. So while it might be everywhere, we have a lot of it around here.
Yeah, if we can call that a claim to fame, yeah. We are definitely what's called highly endemic. We have lots and lots of deer ticks, and we have lots and lots of cases of Lyme disease annually.
Yeah, my producer tells me that you developed a Lyme disease vaccine for dogs.
Yes, we've been actually, you don't start out to make necessarily Lyme vaccines for dogs. Mm-hmm. You start out to make Lyme vaccines for humans, and we certainly did that back in the early 80s and early 90s. And unfortunately, that was kind of a failure. It's a difficult organism to protect by vaccination, but we have made a couple of successful canine Lyme disease products. And we've made a couple in this laboratory in conjunction with a couple of different commercial companies that have been very successful and seem to be working very well.
Oh, so, yeah, we actually have a question from one of our Facebook posters who writes, please, please discuss the lack of a Lyme vaccine for humans. Why are our dogs better protected than we are?
Well, there's an easy reason for that. If we were going to make a human vaccine, we actually would make it exactly the same way we make it for canines, for dogs. The difference is that with humans, they don't tolerate very harsh vaccines. They want vaccines to be given to them that don't have any pain associated with them or any side effects. And dogs aren't quite as picky, or at least we don't listen to their complaints as much. And so the vaccine for dogs is a little bit more harsh than we probably could use in people very regularly. People just wouldn't buy them. But in dogs, we've managed to make the vaccines a little bit more harsh so that they're a little bit more effective. And they of course, they need it because they see lots more ticks than people do, typically speaking. And we've managed to get the efficacy of the vaccine in dogs to last, or at least the effectiveness to be up to about a year. And that's very good. That covers a good long tick season in most areas of the country.
Yeah.
And that would not happen with people without making a product that would probably sting. And people would not want to take that annually.
So it would hurt the site where it was injected, and we just wouldn't feel very good after we had the shot, and nobody wants that.
Correct, and that's what's happened. People want vaccines in people that you take once during the course of your lifetime, and of course we give them to the dogs every year, and people don't want to tolerate vaccines that might hurt every single year, and most of them will say, well, I'll just keep the tick off. So there's a lot of commercial aspects to that. If the company can't make money, then they just don't really feel the need to pursue them as much.
We are talking with Steve Callister, a senior research scientist at Gunderson Health System, about Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses, talking about tick season. It's back in Wisconsin. And Steve tells us that the ticks are out there, plenty of them. So the winter did not kill off the populations as some had hoped. What do you think about this? What questions do you have about Lyme disease? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about Lyme disease in Wisconsin, talking with Steve Callister, who researches ticks and Lyme disease in the state. He's a senior research scientist at Gunderson Health System, and we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a call from James in Viroqua. Hello, James.
Hi there. Hey, this is a thoroughly disgusting topic, I might add, but whatever.
Thank you.
Keeping me awake during a 1,000-mile road trip today. So anyways, my question was, I live in a small town where everybody knows everybody's business, but the outcomes once you've been infected with this disease seem to vary from no symptoms or, a couple weeks treatment of antibiotics and you're healthy again, to people having a lingering infection that's going to stick around for, they'll be bedridden for a month here, a month there, and then maybe they'll be sick in bed for 6 months at a time. Any idea why, besides, you know, the obvious human variation?
Yeah. Are you able to handle that one, Steve Callister?
Well, there's lots of potential reasons for that. The organism is, like I said earlier, is caused by a spirochetal bacterium that gets in different areas. And so people think that, well, if I get rid of the organism, then I should just immediately be well. And the treatments actually are very effective if caught early with antibiotics, traditional antibiotics. But it's not uncommon to have residual effects dependent on where the organism was had taken up residence. So if you get an organism in the joints, you can certainly have inflammation caused from the organism having been there, even though it's no longer there, for months afterwards before it finally resolves.
Thank you, James, for the call. Sorry to gross you out. Jerry writes on Facebook, the ticks are bad in central Wisconsin. Our two dogs pick them up all the time. Then we sometimes find them on the furniture. Daily tick checks are a must. Both dogs have tested positive with the disease. One needed the 30-day pill treatment. And I hate it when you wake up in the middle of the night and you feel something crawling by your ear. Oh, my gosh. It would be awful. What about, is a treatment for dogs pretty much the same, an antibiotic for a dog?
Yeah, the treatments are identical. Some of the different things, though, with dogs are there are some very good tick preventatives out there that can be used safely on dogs.
Yeah, like what?
Well, these spot-on applications like Frontline and some of these things that they put on the dog actually work very well to prevent ticks from biting and actually to kill the ticks on contact. We don't use those types of compounds on people because they tend to have side effects in mammals that aren't covered with hair, but we can use them on dogs because the chemicals that are effective at working against the ticks stay in the hair layer of the dog. So if he's seeing a lot of ticks on dogs, some of those spotting agents that control ticks and fleas can be very effective at keeping the tick population off the dog.
Yeah. What about cats? Is there something, is there a vaccine for cats?
There isn't that we can officially say. Nobody's really done the studies. If we were going to make a vaccine for cats, it would be the same as the dog product. We don't see as much Lyme disease in cats, and I've never really heard a good explanation for why. Some people claim it's because cats are a little bit better at cleaning themselves and kind of keeping ticks off of themselves.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, they groom so much that they pull those suckers off.
That's what people have surmised because you see it, and they do get Lyme disease, but you don't see it with near the frequency as you do in dogs. Yeah.
Lynn in Lannan is with us. Hello, Lynn.
Hello.
Yes, what's your question?
I spend a lot of time outside. I also love camping, but I live in an area where I go out and get sticks and wood for the bonfires and things like that. And one time I actually looked for morels with a friend and picked two off on the way home. Am I not even realizing? And so I'm wondering how many times I've missed them. And so the symptoms I hear, but what if you're really not aware of the symptoms? I mean, I have kind of this year achy joints. Of course, I'm in that age group that might have that. And I'm wondering, is there a protocol? I mean, how do you, besides spraying yourself, oftentimes I have had shorts on and little foot gear and not been covered completely.
Yeah.
Well, I
think to know, is that living inside of me and after a camping trip, should I go? I mean, I'm alone. I don't have anyone checking my body and for ticks other than myself, so... What do you do for prevention besides, of course, covering yourself and spraying yourself? And then after you come home, say you're suspicious that you might be infected, is there some go-to thing that you do when you come home, like go to the doctor for a blood test or whatever?
Well, I'll tell you this. I think that if you're doing reasonable good tick checks and you're not seeing ticks, that's number one, a very good sign. The second thing is that The real telltale sign that people have to be aware of for Lyme disease is a skin rash. And so I tell people that, especially during any warm months, if they develop any kind of a rash anywhere on their body, and not a tick, but just a rash, they should have that seen by a clinician, because that's the first sign. But I would also say that if you're going to get Lyme disease, you're going to get sick. You're going to know something's wrong. You're going to go into the doctor because something is wrong. And I would also offer that we've come a long ways. There's very good laboratory tests now for diagnosing and finding the Lyme disease organism. And so the old days of not knowing how to test for it and kind of guessing are really gone. We really have some very good tools at our disposal. And I don't really think, from a clinical standpoint, from what we see here at the hospital system, that we miss many cases of Lyme disease anymore.
Well, we will talk more about what you can do for diagnosing and treating Lyme disease in our next half hour. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Steve Callister, Senior Research Scientist at Gunderson Health System. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.